Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Degert. It's Tuesday night in the big county. Not the big town, because I live in North Potomac. Nothing goes on over here. But the big county of Montgomery. And we're talking about the issues that emanate from Montgomery County and beyond. And let me tell you, it's going to be a lot of beyond today, because not much is going on in Montgomery County. They raised the budget. They raised the taxes. We'll see what happens. But we're going to see what's going on in the world, because there's a lot of stuff going on in the world that just needs to be addressed. Now, let me tell you, I'm in not a good place. I'm in a bad place, if you can believe it. Behind this microphone, I'm here talking to you, which makes me happy. I love doing the radio show. I love talking to my people. My people, I tell you. But overall, if I didn't have stress, I wouldn't have nothing. Wife is out of town again. She's working, bringing home the bacon. She's frying it up in the pan. I get to sit at home. Eat bonbons, watch soap operas. Can't even watch soap operas anymore. They're no soap operas. You know what the newest soap opera is on television? It's those housing shows. The Property Brothers and Mike Holmes and Love It or List It. That's the new soap opera. That's where they got the women locked down. Boy, but it's so funny because the Property Brothers, it's like if these stations have something, you know, they get 10 viewers an hour. But if they have something that might spike them up to 15 or 20 viewers an hour, they will kill it. They will kill it and keep playing it. My wife turned to me the other day. She goes, I'm sick of the Property Brothers. I'm just sick of them. And that's exactly how she sounds. I'm just sick of them. And so this is someone who couldn't stop watching them. Now she's sick of them. Good job, HGTV. What was the other one that was on TLC, Trading Spaces with Paige there? Everybody loved Paige. And they found out that the show was catching on, so they had episode after episode after episode. And then they had that one designer who made the Feather Bird Room. It was terrible. Absolutely terrible. And I think that's when the show not only jumped the shark, had like parasailed the shark. What a great term, jump the shark. Those guys who made that up, it's like when Fonzie jumped the shark on Happy Days, when they went out to California, that's when the show went downhill. What a great term. What a great understanding of meaning of that. And their websites there. One day, you know, I told you I never get on the internet about 10 years, 15 years ago. When Jump the Shark first came out, I just went on the website to take a look. And I saw some shows there like The White Shadow and One Day at a Time. Oh, One Day at a Time jumped the shark when Schneider. Like, are you serious? Who's watching that much to make that kind of a recognition of it? Anyway, people do. People got time on their hands. It's amazing, absolutely amazing to me how much time people have on their hands. They're so willing to get caught up in different stuff to make that and make it an occupation, a hobby or so, that they don't have anything else to do, that they can't do other things. I'm going to watch TV. I'm going to microbrew. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Well, guess what? My name is Bruce Negrin. I jumped right into it, but this is Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin. We're here every Tuesday night. Talking about things. Our phone number, this is two-way talk radio, unless you want to hear me talk all night, which I would love to do. It's campaign season, right? Everybody's throwing their hat in the ring for president or getting close to it. Maybe I'll do it too. Phone number is 773-897-6423. The number once again is 773-897-6423. If you want to get on the air, you want to be heard, you want to be talked about, come here. Talk to me. Don't go to Starbucks. Come here. Well, let's get right to that, right? I mean, Starbucks. I am not a coffee drinker. And Starbucks, what the best part about that, too, is they're charging $7 or $8 a cup of coffee. I don't even know. I'm not a coffee drinker. I know coffee's expensive, and they got a store on every block. But who's their marketing chief, their CEO, their everybody? Howard Schultz, the chief executive chairman and guiding billionaire of Starbucks. Came out the other day with a coffee campaign. He's talking, he wants to start a conversation about race in the United States. I hear you. It should be spoken about. There's a lot of misunderstandings, especially you could see it in the last couple weeks. On both sides, you know, don't run it like it's just white people. It's on both sides. And I'm not trying to say, hey, well, it's got to be an even conversation. You know, I don't believe white people are persecuted or discriminated nearly as much as our African-American friends. You know, I grew up in a inner shell, which was pretty mixed, not overly mixed, but mixed enough that having a black friend, having one, would be a surprise because you had about 10. You know, I mean, everybody, Nourishel, at the particular time I went to high school there, between 1983 and 1986, I don't know, it was just a different time. Everybody got along. Yeah, there were fights, there was stuff like that, but it wasn't like racial hatred. Black people, white people living together. I mean, they should have called it MLK High School, I'm serious, instead of Neuro High School, because everybody got along. Everybody was chill. I mean, people just, it wasn't like anything either. It's like, not like white kids trying to eat up black culture or black kids trying to better themselves. It was just chill. I don't even know how to explain it. Because I know that my brother went to high school there about 4 years earlier than I did, or 3.5 years earlier than I did. But he tells me he went to rock and roll high school. I guess things were new. Rap music was coming out. It was new. Everybody was part of the scene that was new. When you played a sport, too, in New Rochelle, especially if you played a football, basketball, or baseball. You know, the hockey team, you know, the hockey team was integrated as well. But when you were playing a sport, everybody just wanted to be down with each other, have a good time, go out and hang out. I think everyone thought everybody from New Rochelle were criminals anyway. So it didn't matter. All we had was ourselves. We couldn't go anywhere else. The people in the Mamaroneck were scared of us. People in Scarsdale were scared of us. True story. I think I might have said this on the program before, but an absolute true story. I played hockey with a couple guys from Mamaroneck, which is Larchmont, you know, upscale. Timothy Geithner had a house there. Joan Rivers is from the area. You know, it's just upscale. Nice area. I like it. You know, if I had the chance to live there, I would have. Taxes are crazy. I don't want to spend $35,000, $40,000. I definitely don't. You know, you can afford the house, can't afford the taxes. But anyway, this was 86, I guess. And playing Spring League hockey in Darien, Connecticut, we had a combined team. We didn't have enough for New Rochelle to have its own team. And Mamaroneck didn't have enough for its own team. And we were like oil and water for a long time, New Rochelle and Mamaroneck. When we played high school hockey against each other, it was rough. And Mamaroneck was always better than us. We beat them a couple times because we had more heart than they did. They had much more talent. But we beat them in the corners, take it to the net, and get it done. Goal! Anyway, I digress, which I always do. But I knew a couple guys on this team. There was Mark Kernan, Dave Macri, and Sean Moody. And they were good guys. We got along. Everything was cool. And we made fun of our Spring League coach, you know, like what teams are supposed to do, rallied around the coach. So we became a team. A team. You know, and we go to bat for each other. If somebody hit somebody else, we'd hit them back. It didn't matter if you were Mamaroneck or Larchmont. This wasn't any like the Remember the Titans at first, you know. Well, it was my team, your team. We got together. What do we care? We just wanted to play hockey. Again, when I went to school, everybody was just chill. So anyway, the guys from Mamaroneck one night, you know, we took them out to New Rochelle. We had the secret spot where you could drink underage. It was Sammy's on Union Square. So we brought them up there. So then we go out one night. It's myself, John Downs, Mark Giordano. I'm not sure who else. Maybe Billy Thompson, John Staropoli. But we went out to Mamaroneck. These guys invited us. They said, come over to this party we're having. So we walk in the door, and literally, people look at us because they knew we weren't from there, but Dave Macri steps up. He goes, hey, these are my friends from New Rochelle. And man, I don't know, I'm wearing like a pink polo shirt or something. My other friends were, you know, I was like nerd prep central. That was the style. Maybe I might have had OP shorts on or something. But that was the style. We go in there, not looking like mugs at all. We're going to Larchmont, we're going to Mamaroneck, we better dress up. I mean, we're wearing sneakers, but we still got dressed up as best as you could for a summer party, you know, white shorts, blue shirt, something like that. So Dave Macri steps up. This is Bruce Negger from New Rochelle. This is Mark Giordano from New Rochelle. Everyone's like, oh, hi. And then you could feel them, like, checking for their wallets. It's like, oh, my goodness. Does New Rochelle have that bad of a reputation that your mirror image, Mr. Larchmont, who just, you know, whose dad wasn't as rich as yours, but your mirror image I'm not going to knock you over the head or take you outside. It's just, please. I mean, we had some tough guys in the Rochelle. I'm not going to lie to you. But looking at me, judge the book by the cover sometimes. You know, three of you could take one of me. What are you scared of? Oh, check it out. I came with a billy club and some brass knuckles. I'm from New Rochelle. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But anyway, boy, I really took a right turn there. I ended up in Rockville. I was trying to get to Germantown, and I ended up in Rockville with that story. But anyway, my man, Howard Schultz, progressive, pragmatic, all of those words that are just becoming to me. Seriously, words. Like, I can't believe it. Pragmatic. You know, progressive. It's all code for a guy who's trying to tell you that he's smarter than you. For a guy who's so enlightened that you have to feel the way I felt at that Mamaroneck party. That everyone's like, oh, really? That you already have a reputation. If you don't agree, you're not smart enough to agree with him. Yeah, he's a billionaire. He made coffee, selling it for $8 a pop. You know, that's not genius. What's the genius in that? Taking advantage of the dumb people who go there? What's the first thing you see on Yahoo every time? How to save money, right? You see all that stuff. It's like, click here to learn how to save money. Brew your own coffee at home. Or if you're a New Yorker, go to the Greek deli, get in that little blue cup with that cap on it, and pretend like you're a cop. New Yorkers are not paying, well, New Yorkers, but, you know, that's a woebegone term, New Yorkers. There's no such thing as New Yorkers anymore. I know one New Yorker, maybe. This guy, Chris Schubert, fireman from Queens, Irish guy living up in Woodlawn now. And if you're from New York, you understand what I'm talking about. But he's a New Yorker. He's a New Yorker, through and through. You know, I like to think of myself as a New Yorker. I'm from the New York metropolitan area. I'm a New Yorker in that way. I'm not a Manhattanite or a city guy. I grew up in the Bronx, man. The Bronx. I was in Riverdale till I was 3. Don't come on my turf. I'm from the Bronx, yo. But anyway, it's there are no more New Yorkers there. Because you know why? The New Yorkers can't afford to live in New York anymore. They just can't afford to live there. So they're all in the outer boroughs getting pushed further out. Even the new people were coming there. That the secret to my success, Michael J. Fox or whatever, coming from Kansas, living in New York. Those are the people going to Starbucks. These are the people who have to be trendy. Or the ones who came from Long Island. Let's put it that straight, too. They're from Merrick or Baldwin or whatever, coming in there. I got to get my coffee. I need coffee. And I got to be Starbucks because I need a mocha latte grande. I need it now. Oh, I have $8 here. Here. Could have bought a whole bag of 8 o'clock coffee from A&P for that money. But anyway, this guy comes out, and I know that they pulled it, but I had a brunch with a couple friends. I was up in New York this past weekend. But I had a brunch with a couple friends, and they were talking. And it's just interesting to hear, because it's interesting to hear people who have the same opinions. Because it's like, oh, you just want your same opinion, homogenous? No, once in a while I'd like to hear someone who thinks like me. Is that so wrong? I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, guys from Seattle who are in the White Tower, you know, in the Ivory Tower, telling me to talk about race relations. Well, and you talk about the one time no one wants to talk about race relations is when they're getting coffee in the morning. Oh, I need my coffee. Don't talk to me until I have my coffee. Don't talk to me. Oh, excuse me, sir. Would you like to talk about the injustices done to the black people throughout the years? If not, let's talk about the injustices done to the Native Americans. Race together. Race together. Back up off me, man. I don't even like talking about philosophical stuff in college, right? I mean, are you trying to bring it back to the coffee house? Fair enough. Get Bob Dylan. Get Llewyn Davis to start playing in the back. Then I'll go. Then we could have discussions about race. But it's so self-serving. You know, people who are progressive, this guy, I mean, even the picture in the Washington Post that they have the cup says race together, and baristas are supposed to be writing it on the cup. You know, like they get your name wrong anyway. Now they're going to write race together. Okay, here's another 3 minutes to get your coffee. Add that on to the 10 minutes. But this guy's got a picture in the Post. He's like under his Starbucks sign, and he's leaning down like he's JFK, Screw you. You know what? Screw you. Oh, I'm thinking about so much stuff. I'm thinking about all these social issues. I can afford to think about it because it's $6 a cup of coffee here. You want a bagel with that? That's $10. The coffee chain's national campaign in which baristas are encouraged to write "Race Together" on cups of coffee while talking with customers about America's racial tensions marked only the latest high-profile act of activism from the Frappuccino firm's patriarch, a 61-year-old executive known for taking conspicuous stands on education, gay rights, and gun control. You know what? Maybe I'm a pragmatist. Maybe I'm a progressive because I got stands on education. I think it's important people should be educated. I think you should be able to afford education as well, especially now that everything has to be college. I was watching something about Don Cherry last night, a hockey player who turned out to be a coach and then a broadcaster. And, you know, he didn't even have a high school education, and his mom was talking to him. He's like, without a high education, you'll be nobody. He turned out to be somebody, but now it's like without a college education. Unless college is like where people don't know what to do anymore. You don't need to go to college. If you have an idea, you don't really need to go to college, but you just can't be a drifter, a floater. Rights and gun control. I'm for gun control, too. Do I put progressive Bruce Negrin? Is this outside looking in progressively with Bruce Negrin? This is the I'm progressive Negrin. That's what I'm going to be called from now on. Hey, what's up, bro? Hello, bro? Progressive Negrin? How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Let's talk about gun control. I believe handguns are a sin. I really do. I've lived in other parts of the country. I believe shotguns are viable. I believe rifles might be viable as well, like for hunting, for deer season. I believe the AK-47 is so unnecessary. Don't even try to run that you hunt with an automatic weapon. Automatic weapons should be off the street. Am I progressive? No, that's just smart. It's just smart. Handguns should be off the street.
Well, I need to protect myself, man. Someone come in here and blow their head up, man.
Funny how we all go to a southern accent or a Texas accent right away. But those are the people that CNN will put on and then Fox will put on, too. They speak for you. These are the people who speak for you. You might be the Princeton-educated undergrad Harvard lawyer and you carry a gun. And you have a legal permit for it and you might believe it. But guess who speaks for you?
Hey, man, I got a gun, man. I got a gun. I'm going to blow everybody up, man.
Like King of the Hill. Boom out. Hey, man, I don't think, man, my people got the guns, man. They got the guns. They're going to be doing what they got to do, man. They come to my house, keep my TV, shoot me, man. But I'm against handguns. What can I tell you? Am I going to hit the next person next to me? Am I going to think they're lower intelligence? No, I'm going to dislike their opinion on it. Absolutely. But I'm not going to turn my nose up and walk away. But that's the progressive thing to do, Bruce. That's the progressive thing to do. And gay rights. I know, that's a tough one. Gay rights. I'm all for gay civil rights. I think a man and a man or a man and a woman get together and they live a life together, they should have a civil union. I'm sorry, the marriage thing gets to me a little bit. You know, it's an institution that, why does everything have to be taken down? You know, I believe in equal rights. Equal rights. Civil union to me is an equal right. But you have it, that means I want it. And it's a tough situation to talk about. I'm almost loath to bring it up on the air because now people will look at you differently. Oh, you're against gay rights. No, I'm not against gay rights. I'm against marriage, yeah. I mean, what institution is held sacred ever? You know, overnight someone wakes up, well, I want that. You know, I demand that. It has to be. We're going to protest. We're going to protest, and I want it tomorrow. I don't want it in change. I don't want gradual change. I want it tomorrow. Instant gratification. Sometimes things have to get washed out to, well, finally, it's no longer a reason to fight anymore. Not for what you believe in, but for what you believe against, you know? Just let it wash out. It's going to come. But now, you know, Alabama doesn't believe in marriage for for gay people. Everyone around the world now on my Facebook is, oh, Alabama, you're so redneck, so dumb. So dumb. Let me tell you about the so dumb people. All right? I mean, there might be, socially, they might be a bit backwards in what you think and I think, us progressive Northeasterners, Middle Atlantic staters, you know, Northeast progressive. Go up to Albany. Go past Albany. There's rednecks everywhere. You know, white T-shirt wearing, axe country sounding, dishwasher having, you know, look at me throwing out stereotypes. It's that simple. It's that easy. That's where you got to break it down. That's where you got to pull it in, because everybody, and it's exactly what I just did before about the gun thing. Hey, man, right to Texas, right to a Southerner, right? I got a Southerner who was a roommate of mine at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. This is before Vanderbilt became a New York school. Vanderbilt was a Southern school when Duke and everywhere else was trying to fake it. Oh, Duke's a great Southern school. It's just a great school. It was infiltrated by New Yorkers, and it got ruined. Oh, Duke, I love Duke. You know, what I learned at Vanderbilt just wasn't book smarts. It was an education in the United States. But again, the secrets are done. The secrets are over. Now everybody thinks everybody in the South drives a truck because of the stupid country music. And yeah, the country music when I was there was a lot different. It was a lot more poignant, a lot more personal, a lot better storytelling. Now it is about trucks and Fireball whiskey. Oh, I got drunk last night with my truck. Yeah. Woo-hoo. But this guy, biggest, you know, my preconceptions are going down there, and they had preconceptions of me. Don't kid yourself. Hey, Yankee. Hey, Yankee. 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 Jeez. My family's second generation American. 1860, we're in the Greek mountains somewhere herding goats. We're in the Austrian border with Franz Joseph somewhere. Come on. Yankees, Civil War, Northern aggression. What, are you out of your mind? Preconceived notions. So I went, you know, I had preconceived notions of them. Because let me tell you something. The biggest sounding, and forgive me for the term, but we got to say it so you understand the picture. The biggest sounding dumbass I ever met is the smartest guy I've ever known. He was from Hopkinsville, Kentucky. I don't want to say his name because I don't want to embarrass him. But he's from Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And the first time I met him, he was unsophisticated in terms of just life, I guess. But he came out, he was swinging his arms. He was a hayseed, a real hayseed. I mean, you talk about stereotypes. Stereotypes have to be true, right? There has to be a reason why they're there. He was the poster boy. He came out swinging his arms. Oh, hell, I don't know. Shucks. Shucks. I like to play golf. Shucks. And I make fun of people on the show. That's exactly how he sounded. My wife is like, no way. Because he's met him. She has met him years later. A couple of them years later. I had another friend who was a Cajun, Reagan Richard. And this, well, let me finish the story about the other guy from Hopkinsville. He was amazing because this guy was sharp as a knife, sharp as a knife in the draw. He was a whip, smart as a whip, anything and everything. I mean, genius. I would trust this man with my life four times over. That's how smart he was. He wanted to be a doctor, and he is a doctor. He's an orthopedist now. If I had any problems, if I had any serious problems, I'm not going to James Andrews. I'll go to my friend down in Anniston, Alabama. Because that's how much I believe, and that's how smart I know he is, Hopkinsville, Kentucky. The two things that threw me about going to school down south, and boy, have I really, we're taking this show wherever I want to take it, so don't worry about it. But the other thing about going down south, and preconceived notions, I mean, coming from New York City or the New York City area and spending time in New York, was the first Asian person I met at Vanderbilt looked as Asian as everybody else. You know, I mean, no distinctive American traits about him. Must have been a first generation, you know, kid, second generation like myself, but definitely inside of an Asian upbringing. And he turns to me one time, I'm at the table. He goes, hey man, can you pass the salt? Sounded just like Elvis Presley. Oh, my mind was blown. My mind was blown. That's why I went down south to school, to expand my horizons. And that is something that showed, like, Asian people. What do you know? I didn't expect that. I expected something else. I didn't expect a Southern accent on an Asian guy. It was amazing. I mean, literally, my mind was blown. And the guy's name was Henry Meng. He's like, hey, man, I want my gun, man. I was like, ah. I just couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. But this is the one that's amazing. I had a friend, Reagan Richard. His name is out there. I can't say anything different now. He was from Donaldsonville, Louisiana. Close enough to Pierpont, where they do Swamp People. You know that show, Swamp People? Another guy. This guy was a biomedical engineer all during Vanderbilt years. These guys used to make fun of me because I was in arts and science. Bachelor of Arts is what I graduated with. They used to drop crayons on my desk and say, have a good day, write me notes with crayons. Because that's what they thought I used, because they're doing biomedical engineering on you guys. So anyway, Reagan goes for 4 years, going to be a doctor, going to be a doctor, going to be a doctor. He totally bombs the MCATs. Totally bombs the MCATs. Never seen a man so mad. And the worst part is when he got mad, he started drinking Crown Royal, and then he started pulling out his shotgun. No, I'm kidding on that part. But I was scared of him when he got like that. That was the one time in my life that I didn't even wise off to him. And Negrin, Bruce Negrin, you know he's a wise guy. That son of a iota. I'll tell ya. But anyway, Reagan. This guy, the first time I met him, his roommate got injured, hurt his knee. So we were all on the fifth floor at Bramson in Vanderbilt University, the freshman. I didn't have a roommate. My roommate backed out. Michael Ray Goodwin. Enough, right? Talking about stereotypes. Vanderbilt, Michael Ray. Hey, Michael Ray! Woo! He's supposed to play soccer. I guess he got a better deal somewhere else. So I had a double room to myself, which caused some problems because sometimes, one time after I realized Michael Ray and classes had started, Michael Ray's not coming, I pushed the beds together. I was like, oh, I got a double. How you doing in college? I got a double room and double beds. I left the door open one time. Someone looked in there to say, hey, what's up with Negrin? What's up with Negrin? He ain't right. He ain't right. I was like, no, gay rights. So you know what I'm implying there. But anyway, they found out everything was cool. Anyway, the roommate, we all got together the first week or so. My friend Reagan's roommate is in the hospital. It's like, let's all go visit him, you know, show solidarity. Bramson, fifth floor. Yeah. Fifth floor. Yeah. Because that was our mural teams. All of our stuff was going to be based out of the fifth floor for our freshman year until we all got into fraternities. Fraternities? You're a fraternity man, Mr. Negrin? Yes, I am. Of the Kappa Alpha Order. But anyway, we go, and I got a guy from Kansas, a guy from San Antonio, Texas, one from Jackson, Mississippi, one from Hopkinsville, Louisiana. Where else did we have someone else? And we had someone else from Tennessee, I believe. So we're all in the car. We go visit Steve. Steve's in the hospital, and Reagan's with us from Donaldsonville, Louisiana. And he's talking, and he's talking, and he's talking. Because Steve and Reagan were roommates. So he's like, hey, you know what? I think I have some footage or some tape from that time. It's amazing that, you know, I had this little handheld Walkman that could record things. But this is sort of what I think I have it. I got to find it. But anyway, Reagan's talking, and no one can understand anything. And here he is. Here's a clip from Reagan Richard.
Lead off, man. Now we where the kind of fuck are we going to? That's where I got a book call at my back.
That is exactly how he sounded. No joke. No joke. So anyway, we leave Steve's room. Reagan's in the car. He's still telling jokes, and he says something. He starts laughing. Everybody starts laughing. We go to McDonald's, we're telling jokes again, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, I'm from New York, but I'm from Hopkinsville, Kentucky, bonding, all this kind of stuff. Reagan says something, he stops talking, everybody just nods their head. We drop Reagan off at the dorm, and I turn to Mike Weber and Scott Holler, and I turn to them, and I say, guys, this is Hopkinsville, Kentucky, mind you. So now you know who he is. But anyway, I turn to this guy, and I said, I'm sorry, man, did you understand a word Reagan said? He goes, no, man. No, I didn't. He goes, I just started laughing when he started laughing. I mean, the kid spoke Cajun. It was quarter. He spoke like he had mastery. He spoke like Bruce Springsteen sings. That's exactly how he sounded. And I never met anybody from the United States who spoke English that I couldn't understand. The accent was incredible. Absolutely incredible. And guys who were from the South had no clue what this guy was talking about. Because being Cajun is being different than from Jackson, Mississippi or Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Absolutely amazing. And you know what? This is why I sort of feel qualified to talk about this kind of stuff. Because I didn't live in a little nutshell, man. I broke out of that nutshell. I left New York City. I thought New York was the end all. You know, the metropolitan area. I didn't even live in New York City, but I thought it was the end all. But I broke out and went to college somewhere else. Moved back to New York, worked in rap music. That, again, you talk about race relations. I worked over a rap music label, Wild Pitch Records. I was downer than down. I was in there. I got threatened by the best of them. I knew to walk away from Suge Knight. The ghetto boys, they tried to get me up in a bathroom one time and push me around. Wasn't having it. Not that I was a tough guy, but the whole thing about it, being a white guy in rap music at that particular time, you had to prove yourself. And what do I mean by prove yourself? You had to be there, and you had to understand what was going on. And growing up in New Rochelle, I told you, New Rochelle High School prepared me for everything. So I was ready. I knew what was going on. It wasn't a white guy interloper. I wasn't an interloper. But I was a white guy. Don't kid yourself. I didn't sell myself out. I didn't get gold teeth. I didn't talk much differently. I had a New York accent. And, yeah, I'd use the words like word and yo a lot. Word? Word? Yo, I'm down with that. Where's the P, yo? I'm in. Straight up. Straight up. I'll stop fronting, man. Stop fronting. Why you always open my grill fronting about nonsense, kid? See? I had it all down. I used to be like that. My brother and my dad, either they laughed at me or they were embarrassed by me. I'm not sure. They it was one of those things. Laughed with me or embarrassed by me. I'm not sure. Hey, Dad, I just got out of college. You spent $100,000 on me or something like that. I'll pay you back. But I got an $18,000 job working for a rap music label. That's awesome, son. That's awesome. Good for you. Good for you on your first job. So I went to every bad neighborhood there was. I've been to Compton, North Philly, South Philly, some areas of Baltimore. Watts, South Central, right after the riots, too. That one I didn't particularly enjoy. College Park in Atlanta. All these places. So, I mean... But I never sold out who I was. I was always Bruce. DJ name was Be Nice. I did a rap show at Vanderbilt, so. Because I had a New York accent, everybody thought I was African American, which was great. Every time I'd show up, someone would be like, "You're Be Nice?" "Yeah, I am." "No, you're not. You're white." "So?" "You don't sound like him." "So, okay, what do I have to do?" I remember one time a friend, Greg Pellegrini, we were at... finals. So we went to go bowling. You know, everybody had the night off from finals. So we went to go bowling. They turned off the taps. And Greg Pellegrini, he had no shame. He goes, turns to the guy, he goes, "You listen to 91 Soul, the Rhyming and Stealing show with Bruce, with DJ Be Nice?" The guy's like, "Yeah, I do. I know Be Nice." Greg goes, "Well, Be Nice is right over there." And he goes, "No way." He goes, "If I bring Be Nice up here, will you turn the taps back on?" The guy goes, "Hell yeah, you bring Be Nice up here, I'll turn the taps on." So Greg pulls me over. He goes, "Bruce, this guy wants to meet Be Nice." So I go up there. I'm like, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Bruce. I'm Be Nice. Yeah, I do the rap show on 91. You know, very modest about it because what am I going to do? "Hey, yo, what's up?" So anyway, guy's like, "You ain't Be Nice. You ain't Be Nice. There ain't no beer for you. And I will do anything for beer." People who know me know that. I will do anything for beer. And if all it took was talking like Be Nice, talking like the guy on the radio, bam, I'm in. I'm in. So the guy goes, "You ain't Be Nice." I said, "Really?" I said, "You better back up on this. Let's have a little pause for the cause. It's 91 Soul, DJ WRVU, 91 Soul, Nashville, 615-321-7625 or 322-7625. Give me a call. Put on your favorite record." There it is, favorite record. Me and the seniors. Pew. Guy's like, "Yo, it's Be Nice." He broke out, got the manager. The manager came down. Beer was flowing. I had to sign autographs and pictures. I'm like, yo, I'm just a little college DJ. But Nashville had no rap music back in the day, and I was the only New Yorker playing it because the guy who had the show before me just called it 91 Soul. Didn't play any rap music at all. Played a lot of James Brown stuff, which was cool and I enjoyed. But once he graduated or decided to hand over the reins, I kicked all that stuff to the curb, and we started playing Public Enemy and Run DMC and Eazy-E and NWA and all of that stuff back from 1983, 82, and it was great. It was fabulous. It was wonderful. 86, oh, so into it. And these guys, man, they're like, oh, be nice. Yo, you got to give me a shout-out. They're writing their names down on napkins or coasters. Yo, you got to give a shout-out to Willie Colon, man. I'm your number one fan. Be nice. Yo, I'm your number one fan. So the whole show was like, I want to send a shout-out to Willie Colon at the bowling alley. So every time we went bowling, free beer. How you doing? How you doing? I'll give you a chance to talk. I still want to get back to this. I know more about this race relations Starbucks nonsense. But the program is called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negron. I'm here every Tuesday night just yapping and yapping and yapping. My phone number is 773-897-6423. Again, that's 773-897-6423. And I'd like to hear what you have to say. I know a lot of people out there who, all my 45-year-old friends, throw your hands in the air and say, oh. Well, let's get back to race relations. So I'm saying this guy's got that John F. Kennedy pose. Howard Schultz. First time I've ever thought about this guy at Starbucks. But anyway, Kate Taylor, a writer for Entrepreneur, wrote the one voice line painted Schultz as a visionary, painted Schultz as a visionary progressive for daring to discuss race, something others, especially people of color, haven't exactly been silent on in recent months or the last couple of centuries. Schultz has built a reputation by inserting himself at the center of some of the country's most intractable debates. He has asked customers not to bring guns into the company's omnipresent cafes. Don't bring guns into Starbucks. Guess what? I was in Wheels Roller Rink back in 1985 going to see a Run DMC show. And they say, please check all firearms at the door. There's the progressiveness. Wheels Roller Rink in Yonkers. Progressive. Don't bring guns in here. It's unbelievable, man, how people will just follow sheep. You're all sheep. Somebody come out and actually stand for something. I guess this guy's trying, but, you know, it's just... It's just tough. It's really just tough. So here's what he said at his stockholder meeting. He was sometimes pragmatic, saying, I'm not going to stand here and tell you that Starbucks itself will solve the centuries-old problem of racism in America. But he also lapsed into corporatese, arguing that the kinds of buzzy campaigns that land Starbucks in the news are about far more than just selling lattes. This is not some exercise in marketing or PR. This is to do one thing, use our national footprint and scale for good. Thank you, Batman. It just, listen to that. Listen to this article for a second. I am all for making the race issue. I'm all for talking about it. But we got to talk about it in a way. Not baristas at a coffee store. I guess the good idea here is that you're talking about it a little bit. That it's brought up on this show. I know that the campaign went down in flames because it's just so self-centered and so ridiculous to be lectured by baristas. I don't want to be lectured by anybody. It's not a conversation. If someone's forcing the issue, it's not a conversation. It's not a discussion. It's not the progressive word dialogue. It's not a dialogue if the issue is being forced on you. You want to speak in progressive ease? It has to be organic. It has to bubble up. It has to be organic. You know, half the people that are being affected by race, by police brutality, etc., if you want to say that's police brutality, are not coming into Starbucks anyway because they're not affording your coffee. I'm not saying that there's not Starbucks in minority areas. But the people who are most being affected by race right now, the kids hanging out on the corner and get harassed for nothing, because they're just kids, are not the ones drinking Starbucks. But you, great white man, know that coffee is great communicator. right? It's like, you know, I spoke like a Native American from years and years ago. But you know who I was imitating there? Johnny Depp. Mr. Equality. And what does he do? He makes Tonto look like an idiot in The Lone Ranger. And the only reason I know that is because I watched the show on HBO for a little bit, and I had to turn it off. Guy's got a damn crow on his head. War paint everywhere. Oh, that's not stereotypical. Just because you look different. Johnny Depp, does he take a movie if he can't look normal? If he can't look with some makeup on or something like that? That's why he's Tim Burton's favorite. Speaking about actors, what about DiCaprio? I got in this conversation. I had more discussions about race relations and the world at this brunch I attended on Sunday with my wife and my two good friends from New York. What, they're just good friends? Two of my best friends. How about that? Grew up together in New Row. Ho! And we're different. We're taking different paths. But there's some things we believe in and we will stick to. But yeah, I mean, this whole progressive nonsense about Starbucks leading the charge. Again, it's got to start somewhere, I guess. But is that really the place? I mean, and good for this guy for inserting himself. But you're inserting yourself. Exactly. You are inserting yourself. You are forcing me. And again, that is such a progressive way to do things because, again, I'm going to bring it up because I'm cooler, I'm smarter, and I'm better than you. That's my rub. And you read the papers today, you know, and the word liberal is gone. It's a dead word. The PR campaign came out. The word is progressive. Progressive. Bill de Blasio, progressive. The only thing he's not progressive about is getting anywhere on time. This is a guy who got elected by 8 million people in New York City who love him, but they have to hold up St. Patrick's Day parades because he's not there on time. What are you doing Saturday at 11? Not like you're at a funeral for a cop. It's crazy. It really is. You know, and people who are not washed in the blood, so to speak, well, neither am I, but people who don't have the common experience are the ones that are going to lead the conversation on race? No, 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 no. Not someone from Seattle. Not a company coming out of Seattle. It's not organic. It doesn't work for me. It just doesn't. You might feel differently, but I don't. Am I going to say you're wrong? No, I'm not going to say you're wrong because I don't think I'm intellectually smarter than everybody. I don't take an intellectual approach and look down my nose at everybody for people who don't agree. You know, if the world was going to change right away, Tiananmen Square would have been a different story. And what I mean by that is just, you know, I want change. I want freedom. Do you think that one guy was supposed to be an impetus? The impetus for change. Do you think because he stood in front of that tank that the communist government was going to give up what they had? That was the rallying point. When there was change out in Iraq, when the young people, in Iran, thought they had something going during Arab Spring, they got left out in the cold. We want freedom. Well, you got to earn it. And what's the thing at the Korean War Memorial down here? Freedom is not free. You got to put in the blood, sweat, and tears to get it. And I guess the conversation's got to start somewhere. Again, I understand that part. I just think it's ridiculous that it starts at Starbucks. A place not built. People waiting in line are going to be talking about race relations. The whitest of the white right there. And I don't even like classifying people by white or black or anything of that sort. You know, it's okay to say, the white people. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like classifying anybody. Anybody. I like a mocha grande and a lecture, please. Just hold a lecture. I have a scotch and water. Just hold the scotch. Bobby, did you just make a joke? I did. Program's called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin. Phone number 773-897-6423. As I said, I'm a single parent for a while. My wife is up in New York, bringing home the bacon and frying it up in the pan. She had some meetings. She hired some new people. She had to go up there and not be an absentee leader. She rolled up her sleeves, showed the people the ropes. Hopefully she'll be home soon because I can't take it anymore. Not the kids. Kids are fine. I bought into this. I like the kids. I'm not one of these dads when he's alone that dishes pile up in the sink. As a matter of fact, I pride myself in trying to get everything done. If you can schedule your day, you can get things done. Of course there are monkey wrenches. Someone could throw a monkey wrench and something doesn't get done. I mean, right now, my kids should be in bed. They're in second grade and in kindergarten. They're going to stay up for another 14 minutes. After I'm done with the show, I'm running up there, putting them into bed. I have to. But I got nowhere to do. They should be in bed. But I can't do that if I want to do this radio show. This has become a commitment that I want to keep to you and to myself. Because that's what it's about, keeping your word and keeping your commitment. But anyway, these kids, they don't drive me nuts. I love them. We have fun. I actually asked them tonight. I said, well, Mom's away and Dad's around. Does anything seem different? They're like, no. We miss Mom. We all miss Mom. Absolutely. But things, they have their lunch. They're out on the school bus in time. There's nothing different about their days. I learned that from my dad. When my mom passed away in 1985 and I was in 11th grade, my dad, the greatest guy I know, the greatest man I know, kept my life the same. Mom was gone, and I miss her to this day. But my dad kept my life the same. I had lunch. I had breakfast. I had dinner. Nothing changed. And this guy was holding down a job. I mean, I was an adult, and I tried to help out as much as I could. But when I didn't, he was there. And that's the way I try to pride myself. So all these dads who are out there is like, oh, I got to watch, you know. Sometimes you can get caught behind the eight ball. I get it. I understand it. But you can't give up. Get up a little bit earlier. Clean the dishes in the sink. Put them away. Do the laundry. It might be that I am prideful, and it might be that I just want everybody to know that this house can run if Gina's not here. I can handle it. I can handle it. Great story yesterday. I got kids who are starting to play hockey. They go ice skating. Went out on a limb. Found some cheap rollerblades from a website. Got them the rollerblades. They were excited by them. We went outside. I told you my kids don't go outside. They went outside to go rollerblading. Rollerblading, I tell you. And they were okay at it. And what it's going to be great is I could see how it's going to help their ice skating. So it's a win-win. So anyway, we go out rollerblading for about 40 minutes. Some other kids come out in the block. After we take the spin around the block, Ryan's like, my oldest says, can I go up the block and play? Absolutely. Go play. Absolutely. We could do homework later, man. His homework did get done. But he went out there, and my youngest, Landon, goes out there too. I call him home for dinner. Everybody goes in for dinner. It gets it about 6 o'clock now. Ryan comes up the front door. Landon comes up the front door. Everything's great. I put him to bed. Everything's problems. No problems. We get up this morning. No problems. Cook them their breakfast to make them their lunch. We're going to make the bus. No problems. Ryan gets on all the stuff out the door. Landon. I'm like, Landon, put on your shoes. Landon likes to, he's John Belushi. He's an incarnate of John Belushi. He'll roll his eyes at you, give you the eyebrows, the whole nine. He's like, hug? Give all these kinds of stuff, all these jokes. Facial contortions, everything. He's a funny man. He's a funny little kid. Really, it's funny. But anyway, I'm like, Landon, put on your shoes. Landon, get your shoes. I don't know where they are. What do you mean you don't know where they are? It's like, finally I lose it on him. Yelling and screaming. Can't find his shoes. The kid lost his shoes somewhere in the house. What is that? Brand new. Totally unexpected. Brand new. You can't pull this on me. He came home right behind his brother from the same house they were playing at. I checked the bathroom. I checked the closets. I checked downstairs. I checked the cubby. I checked the washing machine. I checked everywhere. I can't find the kid's shoes. Can't send him to school in Crocs. It's 45 degrees. Can't send him to school in Crocs. You look like an idiot. Thank God Ryan's got a backup pair of sneakers. I pull him out and I'm like, Landon, this is what you got. So what am I doing? I still can't find him. I said, okay, I'm going to search the house all day. Screw my job. I'm going to find these sneakers. I'm looking around. I can't find them. I still can't find them. I don't want to buy them a new pair. Not yet. Because they got to be somewhere, right? Am I going to have to look around outside now? That's what I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to take a walk around my house to see if he left his shoes outside. I can't find his shoes. I have to drive him to school. One son gets on the bus. I got to drive the other kid to school because he can't find his shoes. What is going on? That's a monkey wrench no one expects. You guys remember the Twitter feed stuff my dad says? It's actually a curse word, but it's stuff my dad says. Well, I have that sort of in my family, too. And I debated about speaking about this, but I watch Private Parts with Howard Stern. And he goes, just talk personally and people will enjoy it. Well, I'm going to talk personally a bit about my mother-in-law. I know she doesn't listen to this program, so I'm going to be fine. But it's unbelievable. My mother-in-law is an unbelievable creature. She helps out with the kids. She comes down here, you know, after school, between 4 and 5 and or whenever, and helps out with the kids and stuff. Today, and it's just a microcosm of how it is. And when I talk about stress, this is what I mean about undue stress. Ryan, Potomac Pizza came to Ryan's school today to make a pizza. That was their field trip. So Ryan brings home a little pizza, and I think he had a slice of pizza at school. But we decided today, Tuesday, you get the two-for-ones almost. You get a large pie, and then for $2 more, $3 more, you get a second large pie from Potomac Pizza. Well done, crispy, the way I like it. As good as it can get down here so far, even though Mama Lucia's got pretty good pizza. They just need to let it cook a little bit longer. I'm always going to give you the scoop on pizza, I'll tell you that. But anyway, my mother-in-law is sitting there. She goes, I see meat in the fridge. And I went shopping. I went to Giant today early after I dropped Landon off at school and got back before 9 o'clock. That's the kind of fella I am. That's what I'm talking about. Making it happen, getting it done. But anyway, my mother-in-law is like, I see the meat. And this is the way she really talks. I see the meat in there, Bruce. You want me to make it? No, we're going to have pizza tonight. You know, the kids and I talked about it. We're going to have pizza tonight. Ryan had pizza for lunch today. Yeah, he had a slice, but he still wants pizza tonight. I talked to him already about it. Okay, I'll make the meat if you want to. No, we're going for pizza. Yeah, but, you know, he did have pizza today. We're going for pizza! First was in my head. I didn't say it. But it's like, stop with the pushback. Do you see the refrigerator's full? Do you see the kids have been cleaned, have showered? Got clean clothes, have food in their mouths, have made it to school. They don't look like Pig Pen from Peanuts. Do you see that? Back up off me. Leave me alone. I have it under control. You haven't raised a kid in 40 years. You had two of them. One's 47 and the other is something. Think I'm going to give away Gina's age? You think I'm that dumb? I'm not dumb. But they're grown adults living on their own. One is married to me. Another responsible adult. I appreciate your help, but understand I got it. That's what makes my days long when Gina's not here. Dealing with my mother-in-law. Gina's never had to deal with a mother-in-law. As I mentioned, my mom passed away. So she's never had to deal with that. No, I know better than you. And the worst part, she's a progressive. But it's constantly like that. You know, I watch the kids wash their hands with soap. Go wash your hands. Go wash it. They wash their hands, Pam. They wash their hands. Oh, I didn't know. You didn't know I told you they washed their hands. And after I tell you, you still tell them to wash their hands? I'm Mr. Cellophane, Mr. Cellophane. You can't see me, I'm invisible. Really, to get that at home, there's nothing more frustrating than that. I mean, I'm all fired up. And this on top of all this other stuff, like Culligan. I want to talk to you about Culligan water purifiers. When I moved into this house, the Culligan system was like 12 years old, so it was time to update. I get Culligan to come in here. They take out the system. They say it's on a rent-to-own, like I'm Rent-A-Center. cost me $900. They said, well, you can pay it off anytime, but you can make payments right now, monthly payments. You can pay it off anytime. Thank you. Wonderful. I love it. I called about a month ago, and I did not act on it to get the buyout price. Buyout price comes out $546. It makes a difference in the taste in the water, you know, and for all the mental stuff and all that kind, you feel more at ease, all right? Instead of, even though the water in Montgomery County, according to this Culligan's test, it's pretty good. At least on my block, it's pretty good. He said there wasn't a lot of chemicals, wasn't a lot of et cetera stuff. I don't know. He broke out the pink and the pH test and the whole nine. But anyway, so a month ago, I get something that says 590, 560, I don't know. It was 500 and change. High 500s. I made a payment because I had to print it off and scan it and all that stuff, so I didn't pay off the whole thing. So maybe wait a month. So I just paid the other month. So I call up today and find out. I said, can I get the thing? I called up last Wednesday. They said, it'll be back to you in 48 hours. I call up Monday. We have no record of you calling. Okay, here we go. Here we go. You know, once you hear that, you strap in. So finally, they get that lady off the phone, and she goes, oh, well, this lady's just training. I'm actually the person now. They'll get back to you in about 48 hours or 24 hours. She said they'll get back to you this afternoon. Waiting around in the afternoon, didn't hear anything from Culligan. I call again today. Now I'm on the annoying customer list, and I was about to pay for it. They were about to get me for it, try to get me for it. But guess what? I check my bills. Told you last week about the Olive Garden thing. Somebody bought soup and salad for $43. I bought soup chicken parm and three other dinners for $9. Schmuck didn't check his check. I check my stuff. So anyway, with Culligan here, I call him today. The guy finally calls me back. I go, yeah, I want the buyout cost. He gives me the buyout cost. I've had the machine for close to a year. The cost of the machine was $900. He tells me I'm paying $36 a month for the last 11 months. The guy tells me my buyout cost is $790. What? You know what made me mad about this, too? Is that, for one, that they don't know what the hell they're doing. Culligan of Annapolis. So when you do your buyouts there, make sure you check it. Number two, it's just, I mean, simple math tells you it's not right. It's not cents off. I'm not nitpicking here. It's not a couple dollars off. It's a couple hundred dollars off. Is this supposed to be your whipping me back for calling you and being annoyed? Because customer service stinks? Is this what it's about? So really, I mean, it's like, come on now. Really, are people this dumb? And does people just get rolled over this quickly? And again, I don't want to fight. I'm not here to fight all the time. I just want my payout so I can pay it off. If I didn't have this other one, maybe you could have gotten me. But I already had a payout amount 3 months ago that was $560 or $590. Now you're giving me something for $760 or $790? That doesn't work in my book. It doesn't add up. Not even in the Common Core standards does it add up. It just doesn't. And the worst part about it is I got to sit on it until tomorrow morning. Because I didn't look at the thing till 5 o'clock. I mean, what's the difference? I looked at it today, but I didn't look at it till 5 o'clock. So now I got this eating inside of me and the lady telling me that the kids don't want pizza when they did want pizza. I cannot wait for hockey tomorrow. I cannot wait. I'm going to nail somebody. That's not true. That is not true. It's just a good ruse. But it's like, oh, my goodness. Stress upon stress. And now this whole Culligan thing is going to keep me up at night. And you're like, Bruce, don't waste your time. You know what? I won't waste my time. I'll be like Serenity Now or something. Think about my happy place, which is in Kauai. At the Sheraton in Kauai. Or actually, at the Moana Surfrider in Oahu. I had the windows open. The trade breeze was coming through. And they were playing Hawaiian songs, and that's what I was liking. Anyway, the program's called Outside Looking In with Malcontent Curmudgeon. That's my name, Malcontent Curmudgeon. But anyway, hey, do me a favor. Do something today that makes you better tomorrow. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.
Do you know who I am? I'm Mo Green. I made my bones when you were going out with cheerleaders. We'll be right back.
So she chased after her dream with much desire. But when she got too close to her expectation, her dream burned up like paper and fire.
Paper and fire.